welcome to this edition of the Law Firm Blueprint. I'm one of your hosts, Jay Ruane, CEO of Finalize, one of the million plates I have spinning at any one time, as well as managing partner of Ruane Attorneys, a criminal defense and civil rights firm in Connecticut. And with me, as always, down there, Price Benowitz man, Seth Jehoshaphat Price, as well as the grand poobah of all things digital with Blue Shark Digital. Now, Seth and I actually got to spend some time at the end of last week together. Not much, but we were in Detroit for the Fireproof Summit. And Seth, I got to tell you, that was a great time. I know we've got Mike Morse coming on in the coming weeks to talk a little bit more about that. But let me get some of your takeaways from it, because I got a few of my own.
I mean, look, this guy's built a juggernaut, and it is impressive. He owns a city. It's rare to see a lawyer dominate a market that way with systems and processes. A lot of us have firms with a lot of good stuff going on. He's just supersized it. And, you know, a lot to learn from, a lot of stuff frustrating, because I know that I planted my flag in a market with different laws and, you know, a much more competitive employment environment. You know, the people that go to Detroit, Pensacola, Dothan, Alabama, have done things that are very, very hard for us to replicate. But I don't want to take excuses. I want to sort of emulate whatever I can from it, because they do some just amazing things within that organization.
Yeah, they certainly do. And that's actually something I was lamenting to friend of the show, Ryan McKean, about that, you know, in our world, the Boston to DC corridor, you know, you've got a, I don't want to say a higher college, more college educated crowd, a few more hustlers. It's just geographically, demographically different for the population of people seeking jobs. You know, sometimes I think maybe I should open up a call center in the Midwest somewhere and have people working for me there. It's rather difficult. I mean, I'm struggling with some turnover this week. I came back from Fireproof and I get an email 9 o'clock on Monday morning from my bookkeeper. Hey, I'm resigning effective immediately. Sorry for no notice. See you later.
And look, and not only to me, that's the piece that is, I had that early in my career. We've had somebody 10 years plus in that seat, you know, head of finance, but that is a scary, scary one for me, because there's no easy answer, especially the criminal practice, all the moving parts. And it's on a personal level to see a place where people are there 10, 15, 20 years, right? And then you come home and you're like, man, I can't even hold on to my bookkeeper. And I know it's not your fault. It's not that, but it's just like, you know, we're putting all this stuff in place and now you're back. It's like the number of days since an accident on the job and you're back to number zero. I have a situation where a number two admin person was really just having a not a great attitude towards certain things. And you're sort of like, hey, I need this fixed or I need it right. And it's just painful because I see, oh, wow, you know, these guys have had people for 10, 15 years in these roles and they're crushing it. And there's not a question of attitude or, you know, negativity. Again, I'm sure, look, it's not like there isn't issues in every organization, but it is particularly hard after you see somebody who is dialed in particularly well.
Yeah.
And humbling when you look at your own stuff. And, you know, what was interesting about the power of this show, bumping into random people at the summit who I don't even know. They've never reached out. They've never responded to anything we've had there, but a regular listener to the show and know everything that we're doing. Yeah. That was really cool. But when you come back from these things, that plus a tumultuous return, that combination of like, you come back on a high, like I can do all these things. And you're just like, now I can't even forget about getting to there. I have to start and figure out how to build back up to zero.
Yeah, well, and that's one of the things that we took from it is that I had a heart to heart with, you know, my leadership team and especially the head of my, you know, intake team. And I said, we have to stop thinking that we put low dollar, you know, useless people in reception and intake. We need to have the best of the best. And her response was, then I need to get rid of two people this week because they are consistently, you know, making errors that we're cleaning up. They're pleasant people, but they are not A players. They're not even C players. Do I have the authority? I said, well, you have the authority. And one of them was the son of a 30-year employee to the firm. I mean, an employee that predates me in my firm was actually with my father. You know, he wasn't expressing to his mother the issues that he was having, all of his write-ups and stuff. And I think I probably dropped the ball into not looping his mom in early enough that so that she knew all of the issues, because then when she sees the write-ups after the fact, she's like, okay, well, I guess, but I probably should have been telling her all along, hey,
Well,
your
I mean,
boy's
look,
not
it's a
cutting it.
fine line because it, but I'll tell you this. So Andrew Finkelstein, friend of the show, been on the show, another great place, outsourcing to Neuberger. Freaking awesome, right? He's a guy, he has one of the few firms that's more impressive than what we saw up there, if that's even possible, right? Just incredible what he's built. But he's told me stories, and I think he may have shared them on the show if we go back, where he had, four siblings, people related, mothers, daughters, sisters, and working at the firm, and one person had to be fired. And he was pretty systematic about it, where he brought them into the loop, showed what was going on, and didn't get their blessing, but got the buy-in because they have enough of a firm culture where they get that that's what's, that it's the greater good, and that you just can't have somebody who is harming the organization. But yeah, I think that the downside is, it's awesome that you gave that opportunity, but it comes at a cost because if this doesn't get handled right, the last thing you want is to not just have to remove somebody who's not performing. It sounds like objectively so, but you don't want to risk that that other person is going to feel tainted or not feel as appreciated or worse. That would be devastating.
It's and this and these are the problems you have that you can never sort of anticipate. I mean, we all know as you grow and scale your law firm, as you grow and scale your business, you're going to run into challenges. Do I have enough leads? Are the leads quality enough? Do I have enough staff and that type of thing? But the interpersonal stuff that happens, it's you can't predict it. We had another person who was recently let go, who was a superstar in a prior employer who folded up shop and then came to us and was also underperforming. Now, I wonder, was that they are a superstar a load of crap? But I had heard about them being a superstar for 4 years, 5 years, and then said, well, if they're available and the other place is out of business, let's bring them in. And then they're not a superstar, or they might have been a rock star by some lower standard, but not by our standards.
Well, look, I mean,
How
I'm
do
going to
you?
go somewhere that's, it's real, it's controversial, not controversial, but mental health post-COVID, we see the celebrities. Look at how many FU celebrities that are household names that have killed themselves in the past few years, right? Real stuff, people you're shocked with. Best dancer, father, you see it, TikTok. I mean, crazy stuff is going on. And, it's very tough as an employer because you want to be supportive. It's just, there are lines that are drawn, and you see people post on Facebook, hey, if you're having issues, reach out. The question is, how do you handle that as an employer? Because there are a lot of people that could use a helping hand that need support, but you're as an employer situation, you're in a unique place where there are things you can do, but there are certain areas where you don't want to really be touching.
I'll be honest with you. We talked a little bit about this last week when we were at the summit. I am now my day two. It was supposed to start on Monday, but it couldn't start on Monday. My day two. Excuse me. I think I'm going to sneeze. Maybe not. Day two of my sabbatical. I'm taking 100 days off, and I'm taking 100 days off for my own mental health. I'm trying to get away. Of course, now I get keep dragged back into some of the fires that are going in the firm that they want me to,
And we're going to pivot for a second. That is one of the issues. Forget about the 100 days. That's awesome. I hope it happens, God willing. But as you're building and growing, something that I've seen is if unless you go with redundancy, which brings profits significantly down, you are that redundancy. So knowing what I know about you don't want a fat operation, which means when that person leaves, there's a likelihood, you call it a sabbatical or not, you may get dragged back in had you had, a deputy bookkeeper, I'm making this up, that was there, that was redundancy, that had other jobs, that you weren't double paying for it. you know, you'd have a fighting shot. But there are moments when these things happen where unless you have that layers, and what we saw at Fireproof was when there's enough layers of management and mid-level management, no one person knocks you down.
Right.
They may hurt you, but it's not the end of the world. Whereas here, that one person is pretty central without a backup. You know, good luck with your 100 days, because there's a good chance you're gonna be back interviewing, training, putting in place. I hope that you have enough redundancy at the firm that does it, but like, there's a pretty good chance that if you want the rest of the firm to run well, there's not enough fat on the bone at this stage of growth. And you know, again, that's the beauty and the horror of the entrepreneurial lawyer.
And that's the situation I find myself in. I've got someone who's in charge of my personnel now that we've just put in that role. We talked about this, you know, back in like January and February about how we were looking to have somebody, not necessarily HR, but like an operations person who can coordinate the ads. And that's working well. We've got applicants coming in. She's doing the interviews. We've got lawyer, you know, we're hiring lawyers. We've got that. Oh, that brings me up another topic that I didn't prep you for, but I want to ask you your input on this, because it has happened to me, by my count, 7 times in the last 20 years. I have had attorneys leave my office. Now, you know my penchant for hiring right out of law school, where we would train them to do it our way. Yes, we would get them at a discount. And then, you know, 3 or 4 years in, they'd be worth a lot more to another firm, and they get, you know, snapped up by them. In the last week, we had 2 lawyers who've left, one in April, one in March, reach out to my head of legal ops and say, "I made a terrible mistake. I didn't realize how good I had it. You guys gave training. You guys were supportive. You guys were flexible. I've taken this new job and I am miserable. I can't imagine working here another month, let alone another decade or more in this role. All I want to do is come back and do what I know I love doing. I just thought there was something better out there and I made a mistake." And now this has happened to me 6 times. It's happened recently since the beginning of the year with 2 people who left. And I, you know, when people choose to leave, I'm very open with them. I say, "I wish you the best. I hope, you know, you are finding joy in wherever you're going." They were leaving criminal. One was going into state government work, and one was going into insurance defense work. And I said, "I hope you find this, knowing you, knowing your personality, knowing what matters to you that I have over the last couple of years, I don't know if you're going to find satisfaction in this job, but I wish you the best." And then we get a call from them 2 weeks later, a month later. "I'm miserable. I cry every night. I can't do this." Do you take these people back if you've got work for them?
Well, a couple of things. One, I believe, I hope I'm not misquoting, Finkelstein is an absolute not. Once you're gone, you're gone. I think I'm getting this right. I hope I'm not misquoting. I'd love to crowdsource this with our people.
Yeah.
Results. Look, it depends where you are. There are exceptions to every rule. It's not ideal. I would say, as an outsider looking at you, that you may need to do a better job of showing your employees what else is out there. I don't know how you do that.
I don't. Maybe there's an answer, but I don't know.
No. But meaning, you know, basically, look, being that self-promoter, talking about how awesome this is, bringing in examples, make them listen to the show, and we talk about case studies of meltdowns of what else is out there. I think it's a combination of that. I think that for this, you have enough, it's not an anecdotal, you have enough of an issue of people leaving who want to come back. There's got to be some way to message while they're there about how awesome it is, A. But B, I think we're also going to see some of that with the economy, that if assuming that our jobs, you know, look, that we continue to be producing at good numbers, and there's still a demand and money to pay for criminal and still PI cases, and you know, we are able to still make a good living, that you're going to see that Amazon, the tech layoffs are not insubstantial. You know, there's talk of like certain companies not hiring people because they think AI is going to take over certain jobs. They won't need more. They're just not hiring more. So I think to a certain extent, that goes into the calculation. Now, I don't think we realized when those people left over the last few months how much the economy had turned. The economy's turned, and that The good news is hiring should, I've already seen hiring be easier. I would love to hear what other people are seeing, but I am definitely seeing better talent. I know that I need to make hires and I'm finding people, not as fast as I'd like, but it's not goose eggs like before.
Yeah. So, I mean, we were getting goose eggs November, December. Now we're getting resumes in.
Correct. And we've made some really great hires and made some great, two major upgrades that are in our firm that I'm really excited about. But I think that, for example, I think there's got to be more of a program, an intentional, how do you let people see what is out there and what's not? I'm dealing with an administrative person right now who came in with great, great potential and has struggled. And I'm really hoping they make it. But to me, part of it is when I see the influx of talent, if somebody is not crushing it, and even crushing it, if somebody is problematic, where normally you're like, hey, they're in, it's a pain to change out. And I don't want turnover at all. I'm conscious of that. But the answer is right now, should you be okay with mediocrity in a position, or is it, and whereas you might've had to have been 6 months ago because you'd be doing the job yourself, given that there's an influx of potential talent, I'm hoping that makes the people you have stickier, as well as giving you the wherewithal that when something isn't right, you don't have to live with it.
Well, let me ask you this. Are you finding, as some of these tech layoffs come and and people are leaving other businesses because of layoffs, downsizing, that type of thing, are you finding their ask to be way over market because they're coming from a dysfunctional business that was overpaying? Rid of them.
No. I'll tell you a tale of two cities. We needed a recruiter. We had somebody who was in an unusual situation for us, who was amazing, and then just, gave their notice and went into the sunset. And they did a great, which again, we've talked so much on the show that people quit well before they ended. This was like up until the week before they left, everything was great. I saw the Amazon recruiter force out in the DC market. They laid off everybody. Like, they just were like, F this, we're not hiring for a while. And the problem was these were $90,000 to $100,000 recruiters who were being bonused at $4,000 to $5,000 a month. They were getting $150, right? And they were good. These weren't bad people. But
they're not worth that in the market.
We haven't talked about this in years, but the issue is I don't want to be the person saying you're not worth $150, that you're worth $1, right? Like that meaning the idea is you want the person on the job market for a while to realize that they can say it, but until they realize, that this is the new normal, that's my number. But if you're the person saying, no, you're worth a third less, that's never a great place to be. We right. ended up, ironically, with somebody from the Midwest, from one of the big tech companies, who was making had not had that massive inflation because the tech company was taking advantage, I think, of the geography, and got a rock star at a win-win, a raise for them and a solid number for us. And that has, so I think it's tough, especially in the New York market, because the tech companies in the New York, bedroom communities of New York and Connecticut, the numbers were out of control and it doesn't exist. It's not like you can go to Amazon right now and get that. You can't go to Google and get that. Google's talking about cutting out free food, for God's sakes. And not that they don't pay really, really well for the people that are there, but it's almost like there's a second economy. There's ones that was playing with house money, and there's ones that were, every day trying to get ROI from each and every employee. And as long as that second piece doesn't blow up and take, part of the reason that a lot of people go to Eastern Europe and other places for certain tech pieces is that, the Silicon Valley suction that anybody with any of this stuff is at a couple hundred thousand made the ability for us to hire just really brutal.
Yeah. One of the challenges that I see in my local market is that, as a suburb of Manhattan, there's a lot of hedge funds in my area,
a lot.
And, I see posts and I, and, and, and I, I only found this because I was looking to see what was market in my area. I saw some hedge funds and other industries starting receptionists at $80,000, $85,000, $95,000 as a receptionist at their front desk. Now, I cannot pay that. I would not pay that. And so my front desk is empty right now because we're trying to find somebody who fits that, where we are. And I think we're paying over market in most of our positions. It's just.
Well, it's something that I did is we got away from the receptionist. We don't have people coming to the office. We just have some of our paralegals stationed at what would be a reception area, and it's a piece of their job, but they're doing criminal paralegal work
Right.
while. But something I'll throw at you. Hopefully, it's inspirational. I mean, I think it's an interesting story, and hopefully, the audience can learn something from it. But when I lost my bookkeeper, because I remember as I started, whether it was in real estate and then in law. Losing a bookkeeper was one of those things that was just devastating when it happened. It was just like stability. Like when the bookkeeper's there, everything gets paid, the money comes in. When the bookkeeper's not, it's a scary moment,
Yeah.
right? And we lost somebody who turned out was not great. We had up, you know, we needed to upgrade, but at the time we didn't really understood this. We were, pleasant 10 years ago, we were pleasantly happy with what we were getting, even though it turned out it was a disaster. But I remember I was on vacation. I think it was on a cruise ship or something, a Royal Caribbean giant ship with my family. And I'm talking to my law partner, Dave, who you got to meet it up at the summit. And he's like, we just interviewed somebody. She passed all the tests. She seems great. She has a felony conviction for kidnapping or like armed robbery. And he's like a minute away from, he was so desperate that he like we were like, can't do that. Like, she was the getaway car or something. It was crazy, crazy nonsense. And the fact that we were at that point in life, thankfully, the person who showed up and resume came in a minute later was somebody. She's been with us for 10 years. We've had an awesome run. She's been promoted within the department. We've talked on other shows about how hard it is to get higher level, like controller CFO stuff is in a whole nother show we could do.
Oh, I'm sure.
But suffice it to say, those can be dark days when you're sort of like sitting there, especially no notice on a job like that is it's jarring and it's sort of brings a sabbatical to a grinding halt. Even if you're not in the office, your mind and body are back there. Your mind is certainly back there trying to figure out how to restabilize the ship.
Yeah, I mean that, and that's one of the problems that I'm dealing with today is I have let go of the reins to let my leadership team, take action. They were the ones who said this morning, "Hey, listen, we're letting go some people, we're restructuring, we're doing what needs to be done." I had some input on as to, how to make the landing softer for these people, and maybe a solution. On our reception, one of them was on our reception team that was failing, and I said, "Look, let's turn on, that press one for in new clients, press two is for existing clients, because we're going to be down a receptionist. At the end, if it rolls over, instead of it rolling over to the third person, it will roll to that option so that people can self-direct where they need to go. And we hope that that's going to solve the problem until we can staff up because I like people answering the phones rather than giving that automated
Well,
menu.
look, I know that we probably have to get out at some point of this, but let me ask you this, because you went through this. So you've had a couple lawyer turnover over the last couple months. You then had notice from a key person on the finance team.
No notice.
No, but you were notified. Sorry. No notice, but like the person's not with you.
Yes.
Are there moments, and I applaud you for doing it, but I have struggled with this. That when stuff is in as much flux as it might have been, and you mentioned you had two people that were not performing and your team says it's time to go, I have been guilty of kicking the can saying it's just too many moving parts. I
I
can't.
said that. In fact, I brought that up. I said, can we keep this going and not terminate these people for another 3 weeks? Let's get the positions filled we need to. And the response was, you see it as, we've lost four people in the last 2 weeks, if we let these people go. we see it as one person on this team. So that team can still function. That team that we lost one person on still has four people. They can pick up the slack, you know, that type of thing. So they don't see it in the weeds as much as I do.
Well, let's put it this way. Mr. Systems comes through, which means you're doing something right. Because I know that I've been in positions over the years, not recently, thankfully, where we have held on to people longer than we should have because we were like, even though that person might go rogue on a phone call once in a while, they're getting 80% of it done.
Yeah.
They, look, it, you see it in the numbers. We are now at like 90%+ answered. My answering service bill went from $500 to $1,000 a month. Like lots of good stuff. But there are moments in life when you're at when you're building to scale where the when you don't have that redundancy and the person is working at 80, 75 cents on the dollar, where you're better off kicking the can for a while. I mean, you know, sometimes, look, we have a lot of listeners that are different stages. Sometimes you know the system's in place and you're part of the problem. Sometimes it's you're making mistakes in hiring. And then the last part, which you started to allude to, is I genuinely believe that there are a lot of people hurting right now who may have been fine 6 months ago or a year ago or 2 years ago, but that the toll of everything that's gone on has taken it, you know, is not insignificant. And that I feel like sometimes it's whack-a-mole where the most devastating thing is you hire right, you have systems in place, and then the person isn't the same person that came in the door, you know, a number of months back.
Yeah, so this brings up a lot of questions, and I don't want to get deep into it today because we're already going over our time. But, you know, this is something that, you know, I sat down on the plane ride back and we are now 24 years into this firm as it stands right now. And if I look back 24 years ago, my father, who's my partner in this, was my age. He had just turned 50 when I joined his firm and created this. And in the last 24 years, we have built what we've built. And that caused me some pause to take back and say, you know, we've accomplished a lot in 24 years. What can I accomplish in the next 24? And how big do I want to get? You know, what are our goals as a firm? What are our values as a firm? Because it's not just me and him saying, okay, let's make this work. You know, we've got 30 plus people that we're trying to take to the next level. And really my thought process about taking this time off is to say, okay, I've been doing this 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for 24 years. I am burned out. And I think distance is going to give me some clarity about where I want to go with the next 24 years. If I even want to do 24, you know, I had some deaths recently, close to me, lawyers I know. And it's just, I need to take that mental health break so that I can make sure that I'm making conscious decisions and not just sort of going along with the tide as I get washed up on shore.
Well, I feel like, and knowing you as well as I do, I think the existential question for you is, okay, what is a firm? Before it was Jay working and a bunch of people working around. If you want to be a business owner, a lot of people listening to this show are doing it because they want to work on their business, not in their business. They say it. They're not always in a position. I was fortunate you got to meet David, that I had a guy who loved legal that I was able to sort of from day one extricate and not have cases and work on the business. That said, you know, the question is, what is a successful, stable, financially rewarding business that you are not in a legal capacity for looks different than what, you know, your dad was the epicenter of the firm. Right. And you have been for a lot of years. If you don't want to be, that's a different business. And there's nothing wrong with it. But All of a sudden, I have one friend of the show, I won't say the name, who runs a firm where they are the lion's share earning. And they have a bunch of people spinning wheels with awful percentage splits, you know, upside down, 2/3 going to the employee, 80% going to the employee, not in a virtual firm.
Yeah, I know. I think I know who you're talking about.
Right? What?
I think I know who you're talking about.
And what I'm saying is, if you took that person's revenue, the actual, you know, tiger out of the firm, once you are not significant, and I saw this when I started pro forma stuff, you know, can Dave elevate beyond the great courtroom lawyer who's actually in court to somebody who's leveraging other people's work and helping build up the civil practice and only coming in on the most important criminal stuff? When that happens, that is a different business model than Jay is bringing in 1 point something on his own back. And yes, your profit margin than everybody else are lesser, but that's okay because I have enough revenue from that. But then it's sort of like a cooperative, and that's not what you want. You're trying to set something up. And if you take out that 1 point something of yours, right, that's you, Jay Ruane, handling these cases, then you need to, this is the problem. This is where people come crazy with me. You have to scale more to make sure that the lesser amount from all those other people is enough to make it interesting.
Yeah, it's really difficult. I mean, I've been lucky. I haven't touched a criminal case in like 3 years, except unless I have to go and cover a continuance because a lawyer's on trial and I don't plan on getting back into a courtroom anytime soon. I have lost joy for that. Mentally, I don't think, and that's something that I need to pay attention to, right? And make sure that I'm taking care of myself, essentially putting yourself first. I mean, I built this business to give me the life that I wanted. I want to make sure that I'm actually living that life and not paying lip service to. And one of the things I decided I need to do is, you know, take up pickleball, learn to play the guitar stuff. I'm going to end this with this. I have a friend of mine who is 35. So a little younger, works and just took 3 weeks off because I get 5 weeks off a year. And I took 3 weeks off and told them I was going away. And they knew I was going away and, and included my birthday. And I'm thinking, man, I can't imagine three straight weeks with no responsibilities. Even on a sabbatical, there's going to be something that's going to pop up. I hope that it doesn't. I hope it can be kept away from me. And I'm thinking to myself, I need to build myself out of the picture more so that I can actually have the life that I say I want. Because I don't want to be one of these lawyers who talks about, I'm going to work on my firm, I'm going to scale, I'm going to do all those things. And then at the end of the day, it's still 24 hours a day of work. Like, they're supposed to be
And some of it is our own mishigas, right? They're lawyers that, like, that's their identity, for better or for worse. Yeah. I'm part of it. Like, the phone.
My father's that way. We've had this conversation. I don't want to only have law at 74 years old. That's all he has. I mean, he got injured, he can't golf, he can't ski. So now literally he's got nothing else. I do not want that.
And again, this is a whole other show, but like, my dad's 88, he still practices. And you know what? His friends' minds are all done, their body. I mean, I can't blame it on the body, but like, he is razor sharp at 88, you know, to the point where like, we're looking at a president who may be running, it might be 86 by the end, like that mental capacity he has, fine. The question is, if you do circle out, does that, it sounds great, but then you end up playing pickleball at the Villages and like morphing into nothing. So
I don't know. That kind of sounds appealing to me, you know, sitting in a pool all day.
Until you go there and you're like, oh, I mean, like, I think like many things in life, you just got to be careful what you ask for.
Exactly. Very cool. I'm going to go to Florida in a couple of weeks at the end of June and hang out and sit at the beach and play pickleball and see how that life appeals to me. I may come back and say, oh, I don't want that. I'd rather do anything else. But it's really sort of giving me perspective. There's a
difference between doing it for a week or two versus doing it full time.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. All right, folks, that's going to do it for us. There's a lot to unpack in this episode. I got to tell you, we covered the spectrum, but that's okay. That's what we're here for here on the Law Firm Blueprint. It's like our weekly therapy session with each other, and you guys get to listen in. But if you are listening in, I hope you're doing it on our podcast, where you can follow us and take us along anywhere you go by following the Law Firm Blueprint podcast on any one of your favorite podcasting platforms. And of course, be sure to give us a 5-star review when you do it. Of course, if you're watching us live here in the Law Firm Blueprint Facebook group, be sure to make some comments. Let us know. Would you hire somebody back who said they made a terrible mistake? You cut down on the training, but they could also leave you again and leave you high and dry. So those are the questions that we got to answer. So give us some.
Yeah, and let's make sure we post this in the Facebook group so we can, let's put the questions out there and see what we get.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see what people would say. So follow us along. We'll be here live every Thursday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 p.m. Pacific. I'm a little messed up still. And I will keep letting you guys know what's going on in my world. Hopefully, I know I've got a golf set up for Monday for a charity golf outing. I don't know what I've got the rest of next week, but I'm hoping to have fewer times thinking about work and more times thinking about the future on my death. So what do you got going on? Are you traveling this week?
No, I got a bunch of time off till I head to next thing will be Pilma towards the end of the month. Actually excited. Peter Shankman will be down there. Nice. He's speaking, get to spend some time with Peter. And that's my, trying to get down to one trip a month. As you saw from the last trip, there's huge benefits to getting out of the office. I may take that to the 10th degree, but I think anybody who got out and went to Detroit got a lot out of it. And I find that even that there are ones that are not nearly as intellectually stimulating as what we went to, but you always get good stuff and inspired by the people you meet.
Absolutely. I mean, there's something to be said for getting out of your home state and seeing how other people are doing things.
Absolutely.
Because it can just open up avenues. So that's going to do it for us now. Have a great week, folks. We'll see you next week. Bye for now.